Eichelhardt Gardens on Evansville's east side is behind closed gates, but we're going inside. I'm David James, and next on 2 Main Street, a tour of the 25-acre family estate, the home of the late Phyllis Eichelhardt Kardashian. It was her wish to share the estate with the public. There's the French Chateau, the family home, fountains, sculptures, intensive gardens, an education center, and art everywhere. Our guide is Rick Tremont, entrusted to fulfill the wishes of Phyllis Eichelhardt. And we'll hear from a descendant of one of the founding families of Evansville, the Eichelhardts, whose fortune was in cake flour. The Eichelhardt Gardens and the Eichelhardt family history is next on 2 Main Street, presented by the Berger Wren Group at Baird Private Wealth Management. I'm David James, and this is 2 Main Street on the road, outside the spectacular Eichelhardt Gardens on Evansville's east side, right off busy Lincoln Avenue at Newburgh Road. Now, behind these gates is a 25-acre complex, complete with the family home, a French-style chateau. There are also elaborate gardens, fountains, pathways, even an education center. It's described as a sanctuary for the soul, and it's a work in progress. Now, we'll be taking a tour, and later I will talk with a descendant of one of Evansville's founding families. At the heart of the Eichelhardt family estate is the French Chateau, the childhood home and later permanent residence of Phyllis Eichelhardt. The home is now listed on the National Register of Historic Places. Evansville architect Edward Tolley designed the chateau, based on photographs taken by Phyllis's parents, Edgar and Eileen, when they toured Europe during their honeymoon in the 1920s. Edward Tolley was one of the city's premier architects. He designed Evansville's Wrights Memorial High School, the East and West Side Branch Libraries. He was also in charge of installation of lights at Bossy Field and was the chief architect for the Lincoln Gardens housing project. The home has six bedrooms, including rooms for the governess and maid, a large living room, library, dining room, a large screen-in porch, and butler's pantry. There's a swimming pool designed after a pool on the Florida property of actress Agnes Moorhead. There are also other homes on the property for the cook, chauffeur, and groundskeeper. The Eichelhardts also added a horse stable, and the property became a working farm. Today, the Eichelhardt Estate is a gathering spot for nature lovers with its sprawling gardens, and the Education Center hosts speakers and small gatherings. Overseeing the estate and future projects is Rick Tremont, longtime friend of Phyllis Eichelhardt, who died in 2016. Okay, Rick Tremont, we're here at the Education Learning Visitors Center slash a lot of different titles. Tell us about Phyllis Eichelhardt.
Well, what do you want to know?
Well, let's see. Tell me about her personally. How'd you meet Phyllis?
I was a friend of her niece's, Carrie Eichelhardt. This was her brother's daughter. And she got me interested in horses. As you know, we have stables over here. And this was a horse farm at one point. And we started riding. We had a jump set up back here. And I was jumping a quarter horse. And the house was empty, except for the caretaker. And then it was up for grabs who was going to take the house. Everybody wanted to buy the property, cut it up into subdivision. And Phyllis's aunt, Evelyn Johnson, who was married to Lambert, their estate was Johnson Place. Had horse stables. They tore the house down in 56. She did not want this to turn out that way. So over the years, I had a lot of property downtown. When she came into town, I met her, obviously. It was at her parties. And I turned around to a lot of people to do work on the property, landscaping and so forth. That's how I met her. And over the 40 years, we became friends.
Well, tell me about Chanel. She lived in some many locations, had a beautiful home, I understand, in New York City, and yep. Homes abroad as well.
She had a five-story townhouse in New York City, number four Sutton Square. Her neighbor was I.M. Pei, and the Hines were her neighbor. And it was a very interesting enclave. They had their own garden, and Then she had a place at the Palm Bay Club in Miami. Yeah. She would come in and say to me, I'm going to Palm Beach to look at some clothing line. And she was gone. And so she flew to Palm Beach. But her family had a house on Indian Creek Island down there. They had houses basically everywhere.
Phyllis Iglehart was married to Robert Kardashian when she returned to the estate in 1986. Then her husband was in poor health. After her husband's death, she established the Iglehart Foundation in memory of her parents. Her vision was to establish a sanctuary for the soul, to preserve the trees, the gardens, and the family home for the public to enjoy. And this quote, "A place to read or sit in harmony among the old willow and apple trees, a place to retreat and renew the soul among the beauty of an old estate." There are hundreds of trees on the property, those newly planted, and trees dating back to the early days of the estate. Phyllis said she remembered watching her mother plant 65 trees behind the chateau. She told the story that while most children received toys for their birthdays, we planted trees. Still standing is a Norwegian spruce, a gift for her sixth birthday. Again, here's Rick Tremont.
She was a collector of trees. We have right now about 250 species of trees here, all marked with their common botanical name. That was a big thing with her, was all these plants and trees. Now this is after she took residence here in something like 85. She told me that she hated living here when she was a girl because they lived downtown. And Carolyn Carus was her first cousin and was her best friend, and they lived on Sunset. And she was trapped out here. And nobody drove. I mean, her mother didn't drive. They had a chauffeur. And I think her father drove, but he also had a driver. So she was kind of trapped out here in the country. And she wasn't really a country girl.
Well, she says, I think, that one of her birthday presents as a six-year-old was a Norwegian spruce tree?
Norway spruce, it's yes. I'm going to take you for a tour of the grounds. They got trees for the birthdays. Addison, her youngest brother, got buckeyes. And she got the spruce, which is marked as her birthday tree.
Who were the Iglehearts and what was the source of their wealth? Now a little history. Levi Iglehart was among the early movers and shakers in Evansville. At age 33, he left the family farm in Kentucky, moved across the river in 1853 to start a sawmill. 3 years later, he was joined by his brothers, Asa and William, and they started grinding wheat grain at Iglehart Brothers Milling. It became a prosperous family business, and in 1894, Levi Iglehart's son, Addison, developed a new way of milling wheat, making the flour ideal for baking cakes. Because the flour was so light and soft, he named it Swansdown. In 1904, Swansdown won the grand prize for cake flour at the World's Fair in St. Louis.
They started making barrels on the river in something like 1857 and realized that the grain here was so good. And Addison, which is her grandfather, came up with a green grain, and he produced Swansdown cake flour, which was their, they won first prize at the St. Louis World's Fair in 1904, and that put them on the map. And in reading and going back and looking at it, they were worth around $100 million before the turn of the last century, which was significant. Phyllis was one of them that managed to hold on to it. So they, then in 1926, they merged with Marjorie Meriwether Post that built Mar-a-Lago and created General Foods. And that was the biggie. It also made Marjorie Meriwether Post one of the wealthiest women in the United States. Mm-hmm. And, that continued on until 1986, I believe it was, when Philip Morris bought them and split them up.
In 1985, the William B. Riley Company purchased the Swansdown brand, and Swansdown cake flour is now manufactured and marketed by Riley Foods out of New Orleans. The company still markets the Swansdown brand as America's favorite cake flour since 1894. Still to come, the art collection at the Iglehart family estate, the sculptures placed among the majestic trees, and future plans for the estate. And later, I'll be joined by a descendant of one of Evansville's founding families, Jingle Iglehart Hagee. This is 2 Main Street on location at Iglehart Gardens. We'll be right back. Phyllis Iglehart Kardashian was 88 when she died at her home in 2016. She graduated from Baldwin School in Bryn Mawr, Pennsylvania, attended the University of Southern California and New York School of Interior Design. She lived in Europe for several years and returned to Evansville and worked for her aunt's business, Evelyn Cargus Interiors. She married Robert G.F. Lewis of Washington, D.C., and lived there until his death. Her second husband was Robert Kardashian, and the couple lived in New York City until returning to Evansville. Robert Kardashian died in 1989. Edgar Addison Iglehart Sr., Phyllis's father, became president of the company in 1914, and a year later started the International Trade Division of Iglehart Brothers Milling. In 1922, Edgar married Eileen Ellis, who was the granddaughter of the founder of the Phoenix Flour Mill in Evansville. They honeymooned in Europe for 3 months and came up with plans for a French Renaissance-inspired chateau and estate completed in 1932. The C.W. Postum Company, which was Post Cereals and later General Foods, purchased the Iglehart family business in 1926 and named Edgar president of the Evansville division. The company's third and final mill was built on First Avenue in 1909. By 1914, 1,400 barrels of Swansdown flour were produced daily, nearly 1 million pounds every week. The former Iglehart silos are still towering over First Avenue.
And now meet the Queen of Cakes, a Swansdown angel food cake, the loveliest, most delicious treat you can serve your family, a cake that's everybody's favorite. And with Swansdown Angel Food Mix, now it's so easy. The fresh egg whites are right in the package. All you add is water. And you get a masterpiece every time, like this heavenly Valentine cake. Because Swansdown Angel Food Mix is made by folks with 100 years of cake-making experience. Yes, it's the only angel food mix made with famous Swansdown cake flour.
Welcome back to 2 Main Street. I'm David James, and we are on location at Evansville's Iglehart Gardens, the family estate of the late Phyllis Iglehart, one of the heirs of the Iglehart Brothers Milling Company, which later became part of General Foods. On the sprawling property just off Outer Lincoln Avenue are gardens, pathways, fountains, sculptures, the main house, servants' quarters, and an education center to house small gatherings, and a gallery to showcase some of the artwork collected by the family. And there's much more artwork inside the French Chateau. The Iglehart's purchased art from around the world, from the 18th and 19th century to modern works. It's an amazing collection that any museum would love to exhibit. Because of all the artwork in this gallery and in the main house, plans are underway for a larger gallery for public viewings, lectures, and art lessons. The estate itself is another star attraction, with its gardens, trees, landscaping, sculptures. Rick Tremont, who manages Iglehart Gardens, takes credit for the more than 50 sculptures by acclaimed international artists.
Phyllis had some small stuff, but I felt like these trees needed to have a little kick in the butt and to make them more interesting. It gives the place a breath of fresh air. So I started looking around the country to see what's happened. So we have things from Spain over the fountains out here called We Are One, this bronze. I have some pieces from Scotland. So they're just all over.
A popular sculpture along one of the pathways is a giant raven, the work of artist Jacob Novinger of Idaho. It's called Nevermore. Along the pathways, these sculptures reflect the many styles of artists from all around the world, Canada, Africa, Europe, and the U.S. On a golf cart tour, Rick Tremont describes what's around the next bend.
Are these some of the original buildings, then?
This is the original farmhouse, set up top of the hill. This one turned around, fit in the back of that. And that one was for the caretaker and the cook. This is for the chauffeur and the groom for the horses. That's the chauffeur's garage.
What kind of car do they have?
Cadillacs. There were many garages here, and some are gone.
So a chauffeur on call 24/7.
For mother. And I put this addition on the back of this. These houses are full.
Mm-hmm. Are they used at all now?
I have my guys that come in from Louisville to do some landscaping. Mm-hmm. They stay in this one with two bedrooms up. Mm-hmm. And everything's new in them. Mm-hmm. Here's our barn. You see their date in 1932.
Yeah.
And there was a barn there. There were bars everywhere. So the city had us put this detention pond in. This takes all the water all the way from Lincoln Avenue. And it has emergency overflow. It's geared for the 2,500-year flood. So, and of course, those swans in there are not real. Those are, and the dogs, are to keep the damn geese out.
You ever having deer get in here?
We used to. I put 8-foot fence around the whole place, and I know they can jump it. Because we had deer, and I tell you, I've seen one of them jump in this driveway all the way up onto that hill.
Because they'll eat everything.
This brick I put in, this is all permeable clay pavers. And this is a whole drainage system that drains down and out to the city sewers. Mm-hmm. And there's over 100,000 brick. Instead of grout, it has crushed granite. And each grout joint is sealed. Well, I had to have a way to get this water out.
Yeah.
Here's my bridal veil, which we called spirea, but you know, brides used to carry that in the
field. That's right, yeah. It's
called bridal veil.
The golf cart tour of Iglehart Gardens pulls up to the French Chateau home built by Edgar and Eileen Iglehart and last occupied by the late Phyllis Iglehart. She established today's foundation to preserve the family estate for others to enjoy. There's original artwork on every wall. The Iglehart family amassed a collection of works by naturalist painter John James Audubon and an original by French Impressionist Pierre-Auguste Renoir.
Here's a Renoir.
Oh, my gosh. One of them, that's beautiful. Praise that. Who knows?
It's all in French on the back.
Yeah.
Actually, this is one of my most valuable Audubon's.
It's
the Carolina parrots. And the parrots are extinct. And these chairs came in 1925 Paris Exhibition. Cargus actually took these and copied them and put them in the line.
We were allowed to tour the first floor of the Iglehart family home. There are 6 bedrooms upstairs. Downstairs, there's the butler's pantry, kitchen, a dramatic sunroom, the staircase where Phyllis Iglehart would greet her guests, a living room with a grand piano, a library with family photos, and yes, a hallway with more original art.
Well, she collected decoys. They're all signed. This is someone she vacationed in Cannes. And this is an artist. He's Australian. Dated like 1949, 50. And I found a portfolio of his work unframed in the attic. This is T.C. Steele, who's in the attic.
Oh, yeah.
And that's also, T.C. Steele's wife up there.
Oh,
this
no.
Painting.
He's the Brown County.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This was a artist sketcher for Townhouse in New York City.
Five story.
She said that's why she lived so long, is because she ran down those stairs.
Well, I'm going to do it.
The fabric is Brunswick and Fee, and this is Lee Radswell, who was Jackie Kennedy's sister.
Yeah.
Was a friend of Phyllis's in Palm Beach. And this fabric, she turned Phyllis onto this fabric. And I can't get it anymore. I'm waiting for it to just rot out.
Our tour goes back outside as we check out the backyard of the chateau, which showcases the pool and more gardens and a memorial to Phyllis's dogs. And there's a dramatic outdoor walkway to yet another spacious garden. All this is a backdrop when the Education Center hosts events, from lecturers on birds and plant life to a visit by Buddhist monks.
We're open to the public. We just went on to social media. Our mailing list is about 5,000-6,000, which we do a mailing when we bring someone to speak. And we charge for the tickets, but then that money goes directly to charity. So the public is welcome in here now, but as far as throwing the gates open, you know, I can't handle that without having a massive staff here. We have speakers constantly in here. So we're open to the public, but we don't have the gates open. In this building, we've kind of outgrown it. Most of these people that we bring in, we have somebody with an eagle and a falcon. Last year, we had the Buddhist monks in here. Mm-hmm. And I thought, talk about outside the box. We were packed. People loved them. Blessing the gardens, and it was a trip. I couldn't believe it. People just loved them. And so we're all over the board as far as who we bring in.
Back on the golf cart tour of Iglehart Gardens, you can hear the birds. The estate spends $600 a month on bird feed. And our guide, Rick Tremont, says the gardens bloom from spring to fall.
You see the peonies get ready to bloom?
Oh, yeah.
I would say we'll have several thousand.
Oh, wow.
That's
going to
be cool. And this year we bought rings for all of them.
Yeah, that's the idea.
And then I've got 1,000 yellow marigolds that go inside of here. And about June, this place is just popping.
Oh, yeah.
After those bloom, that these lilies bloom, mm-hmm. They're all red. So I try to get a constant turn of color.
Iglehart Gardens, 25 acres set aside for future generations to enjoy. Phyllis Iglehart was a resident of the world, living in Rome, Paris, Washington, D.C., and New York City. She was passionate about art and nature, and an animal lover. She established the foundation, which is described as a gift to benefit Evansville and to honor her parents, Edgar and Eileen. There are more than 350 varieties of trees, flowers, and shrubs, along with art and sculptures from artists around the world. What's the mission? Well, those who run the foundation say they want to create an oasis of serenity where peacefulness and beauty are carefully nurtured. A sanctuary for the soul. Still to come, more Iglehart family history, my conversation with a descendant of the Iglehart brothers, one of Evansville's founding families. My conversation with Jingle Iglehart Aggie is next. I'm David James, and this is 2 Main Street.
Tested by over 4,000 women in their own kitchens, Swansdown is the only mix that wins an all four must for homemade cake, homemade size, homemade texture, homemade moistness, homemade taste. That's because the special new ingredients in Swansdown cake mixes are made to blend perfectly with your own fresh eggs. Try the new Swansdown cake mix in your own kitchen today. You'll love it.
Welcome back to 2 Main Street. I'm David James. If you are just joining us, we have just toured the spacious Iglehart Gardens on Evansville's Far East Side. It's the family home of the late Phyllis Iglehart Kardashian. The 25-acre property, complete with a visitor's center, the family home, a French chateau, and gardens, is now open for small gatherings and lectures. The estate also houses an extensive art collection, and sculptures from artists around the world are mingled among the trees, gardens, and fountains. The Iglehearts are one of the founding families of Evansville, a trio of brothers making their fortune in the milling business and eventually marketing Swansdown cake flour. Joining me now is a descendant of the Iglehart family, a community volunteer known for her many efforts to better this place we call home. My guest is Belle Jingle Iglehart Hagee. Let's get this Belle Jingle thing out of the way. I know you probably dealt with this for the all of your life. Is this a childhood name?
No, I was named for my great-grandmother, okay. Belle Smith Iglehart, Mrs. John Levi Iglehart.
Okay.
And my uncle, the day I was born, said, if you're going to name her Belle, you either have to call her Chinkle or Jingle. And I am hugely grateful that they chose Jingle, although I did not like it as a child. But I have grown used to it, and for the most part, I don't need a last name.
Okay. And every Christmas, I'm sure that's a big deal.
Yeah. Well, yes, but I was not born at Christmas, so.
Oh, okay. All right. There we go. Okay. The Iglehart family, of course, very important in Evansville's history. The original Iglehart brothers, we got Levi, Asa, and William. Levi mm-hmm. got the ball rolling, didn't he?
Yes. Yes. He came to Evansville, and I believe he first had a sawmill. And I just read the other night that he, with his oxen, pulled one of the two barges down the Wabash and Erie Canal. And it wasn't working because, of course, there wasn't enough water in it. So that was not a big win. But he quickly saw that flour milling was probably a better deal. And his two brothers, upon their parents' death, came and joined him in 1856.
Okay.
And opened a mill, which I believe is now where the parking garage is across from SEMO.
Okay, okay. Yeah, I knew it was from Locust Street and...
Locust and Fifth, I
think. That's right,
yeah. And there's a plaque.
Yeah.
There's
now,
a plaque there.
Levi came from Kentucky, is that right?
Did he have Kentucky and then Warwick County.
Okay, moved from Kentucky to Warwick County?
Right.
Okay, all right. And then the brothers, were they farmers too?
They were farmers before moving to Evansville, yes.
Okay.
And the family story is that they couldn't wait to get off the farm. So... They came here and became millers. German background.
Oh, okay.
And they first came to Baltimore.
Okay.
And then part of the family came west, and part of the family, all of whom are still H-A-R-T, not H-E-A-R-T, stayed in Baltimore, and we still have descendants in the Baltimore area.
Really? I grew up in a family that... was involved with the Iglehart. My dad worked for Iglehart Brothers. My grandfather worked for Atlas Mills in Vincennes,
right.
Which was purchased by Iglehart Brothers. I even worked for Iglehart Brothers, believe it or not, Jingle.
Really?
For a summer job, they had me unloading boxcars in the summer. So I didn't last too long doing that.
Well, I was going to say, that was a hard, hot job.
It was. And I remember my dad coming home from work. He was covered in flour dust,
mm-hmm.
you know, working at the mill. But he got, every once in a while, he'd go to the kitchen and bring home an angel food cake.
Ah, yes, the test kitchens.
And you said those cakes had a slice cut out?
I believe that each one, because they were testing the cake mixes, I believe that each one had one slice cut out of it. And at the 100th anniversary of the mill, which was 1956, my great-grandmother was still alive, and my grandfather, of course, came out for the ceremonies, and I have a picture of them. But we family members got to take a tour. I guess everybody got to take a tour at that point, but we got sent home with angel food cakes, and each one had a slice out of it. And we kids were a little underwhelmed because there was no icing on them.
is basic, but now you enjoy. Do you still enjoy angel food cake?
Absolutely, it's really funny. We are all a family of bakers, and that's probably the one that I still make from a cake mix. All the others I make from scratch. Yes, we all still bake, and I'm sorry that Swansdown no longer makes cake mixes. It's too bad. Swansdown Cake Flour still exists, but it is now owned by a company called Riley out of New Orleans. And the box still has the swan on it, and the cake flour is still on the market. And it was invented, I believe, in 1894.
That's right, they say.
By Addison.
Yeah, they say bake with love since 1894.
Right.
One of the slogans.
Right. And the difference, it's interesting. Most people ask me, what is the difference? And it is 27 times more refined than regular
all-purpose flour.
Mm-hmm. Right. Much finer.
Mm-hmm. Was it marketed all across the United States?
Yes. Yes. At the time. And still is. Mm-hmm. You can buy it at Schnucks.
Really? Okay.
Oh, yes.
And now, I understand it received some honors at the World's Fair in St. Louis?
Yes, in the 1904 World's Fair. And I've just come from seeing the replica of the fair. It was huge. Mm-hmm. I had no idea quite how huge. Mm-hmm. But yes, it won fair. And they also sold to Belgium in particular, I believe, during World War I. Hmm. And there is another association that came. A man named Paul Grosjean came here to buy from Iglehart Brothers. And, of course, they bought it in 100-pound sacks, you know. And he married a local woman.
Really?
You know, and we still, and her descendants are still, we're still in contact with those descendants, some of whom continue to work for Iglehart Brothers, or, well, for General Foods.
Right, right. So when was the General Foods, when did that happen? When did General Foods take over?
Is that in the 20s? Iglehart Brothers was sold to the Postum Company in 1926.
Okay.
And then Postum continued, it was C.W. Post, who was Poached Cereals and Postum, which would be a coffee product. And then a few years thereafter, it was consolidated and became General Foods.
Yeah. Was Emily Post involved in?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
She was very much and right up to the end, and she had, I believe, five marriages. So if you, Emily Post, Noble, Hutton, the last one was May. I can't remember, but she was married to E.F. Hutton for a while.
Was it Mar-a-Lago? Isn't that?
Yes, she built Mar-a-Lago.
Okay.
Then when she died, she bequeathed it to the government. And the federal government, I think, finally decided that they could not keep it up and put it on the market, and Mr. Trump bought it.
Right. The Swansdown Cake Flour, we talked about that. Let's talk about the steel business. I mean, we go from cake flour to steel? How does that work?
Well, this is how that works.
Okay.
My grandfather was an executive at General Foods, and he had a strong belief that in a publicly held company, there should be no nepotism, which meant none of his children or in-laws were eligible. But he owned an interest in International Steel Company here in Evansville. And this must have been in the mid-30s, I'm guessing. Anyway, it was not publicly held. It was closely held, not publicly held. And so that is where two of his sons, my eldest uncle, Austin, Junior, and my father, James, and his son-in-law, Wesley Hamilton, all went to work for International Steel. And then, of course, they were very active. International Steel was very active during the war. They built part of the LST. They built Bailey Bridges, which were portable bridges that you could quickly span a river with during the war.
Kind of like pontoons, right?
Right.
Yeah.
I'm told, although I'm not too sure this is true, that because of the weight of the components for the LSTs, that they had to reinforce First Avenue to get the stuff from Edgar Street, where International Steel was, down First Avenue to the shipyard.
Wow.
I am sixth generation Evansville on both sides.
Okay.
Which a sociology professor in college told me how unusual that was. I mean, I thought it was the norm. He said the norm would have been that that generation two or three would have continued to move west.
Oh, really?
But they didn't. They decided Evansville was a good place, and I agree with them. The thing that, for me, is unusual, and again, I thought this was the norm, my two grandfathers, Austin Iglehart and Leroy Beano Foster, were best friends from childhood. They shared their first hunting dog at ages 9 and 7. They went to Wheeler School together. They went to high school together at what was then Evansville High School.
Right.
They went to the University of Wisconsin together. They were best man for each other. And as a matter of fact, my grandfather Iglehart was best man for my mother's father twice. After my mother died, my grandfather remarried, and my grandfather Iglehart stood up for my grandfather Foster the second time, but he did say, these people were in their 70s at the time, he said, Foster, this is the last time I'm doing this for you.
Now, what's the McCutcheonville connection?
It has to do with Erskines and McJohnstons. There was a lot of intermarriage. We have, in my parents' backyard, a family cemetery. It was in Warwick County where AMAX was going to strip mine.
Right.
One day in 1972 or 3, my father received a call from AMAX asking, they had to find, in order to move that cemetery, they had to find a living descendant to get permission. They finally found my father, and he said, where do you plan to move it? And they said, well, over to the side of where we're gonna mine. And my father said, would you consider moving it someplace else? And I said, what do you have in mind? And he said, my backyard. And they said, we would be delighted and we'll pay for it. Now, you understand, the last grave, I believe, was 1867. And this was 1973. The coroner had to be there when they opened the graves, which I thought was interesting. There wasn't much there. There really were almost no bones.
Mm-hmm.
There were two parents and I believe five children, one of whom was so young it did not even have a name.
Mm-hmm. Was he all wooden caskets? Or?
I don't even think they found that.
Okay.
And I guess with the acidity of the soil, it was all sort of mm-hmm. absorbed. They found, interestingly enough, they found a couple of collar buttons
mm-hmm.
and some Civil War fabric, which says something about how things, what kind of fabric was used for uniforms. I don't know. But they took all of that and put it in one bag, and it is under one stone. Oh. But the cemetery is laid out the way it was up in Warwick County. And my parents are both buried there. My sister-in-law is buried there. But in order to be buried there, you have to be cremated. Or as my father so quaintly put it, you have to be put in with a post hole digger. In order to put a body in a private cemetery, I'm told, you have to put up a very large bond with the state, which, of course, you never get back. So the decision was made that in order to be buried here, you have to be cremated.
Well, that's quite the story, isn't it?
Yeah, well, and you know, there used to be lots of little private cemeteries.
Sure,
if you wander around, there are a number of them in McCutcheonville.
Mm-hmm.
One of which, interestingly enough, is where the new McCutcheonville Greenway Park and Nature Preserve is. There was a Catholic cemetery on the hill, sort of where the clubhouse of the old golf course was. And it was, I don't know the proper term, decommissioned, whatever, in the 1940s.
Now, were you ever groomed to be in the family business?
Interesting that you should ask that. I was never groomed for it. I considered it, and I approached my father, and he has a very strong belief that you should not be trained in the family business. You need to go elsewhere to be trained. And he sent me to Bethlehem Steel. He was trained at U.S. Steel. But what I was told when I went to be interviewed is that, well, I could rise to be head of women at the Sparrows Point plant, which is a shipbuilding plant in Baltimore. But, you know, and my father warned me, he said, it's a man's industry. Mm-hmm. And I told the guy, I said, that's not what I'm interested in. I'm interested in learning the whole business so that I can join my families. And he said, well, that won't happen here, you know, which was, and that was in the early 70s. So no, I did not consider it for very long. My brother, however, worked for the company, as did my husband for a while.
So what path did you take?
I went into advertising, and then I had a relocation business when we lived in Buffalo, New York. Buffalo has had a bad reputation, which it does not deserve. It was a wonderful place to live. And since I've moved back here, I work for the IU School of Medicine here in Evansville for a while. But for the most part, I've been a community volunteer. Conservation, education, Willard Library, the Evansville Day School, which my mother was very instrumental in developing.
I know the Nature Conservancy is a big deal for you, too.
Yes. It's one of the best things I've ever done. And they do all of this wonderful, quiet work in this state and the country and around the world. But I'm really proud of the 9 years that I spent at the Nature Conservancy as a trustee. And now, Vanderburgh County doesn't have much because Vanderburgh County is pretty much all developed. There is Nature Conservancy property in Point Township in Posey County, Twin Swamps. And the one thing that we've done in Vanderburgh County is Eagle Slough, which is across from the racetrack. We've done, the Nature Conservancy did the signage there. But parks, I guess some of it is my great-grandmother's. I mean, it was my great-grandmother who gave Iglehart Park to the city. And part of it, the part that is now part of EVSC, part of Highland School, my guess is that Campground Road was a city-county line back then. That's a guess on my part. But the city part was specifically, in the middle 1950s, designated as a park because there was not another park within a three-mile radius. And that says that she was really forward-looking for her day. I was really amazed to learn that.
Well, I think the importance of the Iglehart legacy is giving back to the community. I've seen that over the years.
Absolutely. We were all taught to try to leave this place better than we found it.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
And I think you're continuing that legacy.
Well, I'm trying.
I know you have a big project in McCutcheonville.
Yes. Yes.
The Greenway.
I have to laugh a little bit. Here I am with another little lady in tennis shoes project. We have just been fortunate enough to be able to buy 60 acres of what was the Eagle Valley Golf Course from the school corporation. They retained quite a bit of it. They bought the entire golf course from the Brinker family. And the plan is to build a middle school across the street from the current McCutcheonville School. And so they retained 48 acres for that, and they sold the other 60 on the west side of Petersburg Road to us for a park and nature preserve. Because if you look around, I mean, when I was a child, that was a cornfield.
Mm-hmm.
you know, flatter than a pancake. You know, I spent a lot of time at the community park, which was then called the McCutcheonville Benefit Grounds. You look around, and last year's cornfield is this year's crop of houses.
It is. It is.
You know, everywhere you look in McCutcheonville. And here was this one little green gem.
Mm-hmm.
And we were fortunate enough to be able to save it. And we have plans that are very much in the development stage for what we're going to do with it. But first, we have to raise the $5 million, A, to buy the property, and then to develop and be able to maintain it. I don't know that there's much on my wish list, except
okay.
I would like to see this park become a success, and, you know, in perpetuity,
mm-hmm.
and used by the community, open to the public all the time, or at least the park will be open from dawn till dusk. Okay, let's be honest.
Mm-hmm.
Saving the community and building community, I think, are both very important things that we need to work on. We have become so, I hate to use the word, but here it goes, polarized in this country. And this, we want to be a place for people to meet and get to know one another, as well as exercise and, you know, all of those things that are given to parks. But it is so that we, you know, it's hard to really dislike somebody who you really get to know. And so often, you know, we're talking at one another instead of to one another. And this will be an opportunity and a place for that to happen.
And you can also do that in the kitchen too, can't you? Baking up something?
Oh, yes, we do. We do. One of the things that I've really enjoyed is my work with Habitat for Humanity. I have worked on a couple of multi-faith builds. And when we do that, one of the things we do is all of these, be it First Presbyterian Church, of which I am a member, the temple, the Islamic Center, all of those, and now Memorial Baptist Church has joined us, and the Catholics is we eat. And when we first did it, the temple went first, and they set the bar way high. But let me tell you, you go to the Islamic Center, and there, the last I knew, there were 19 countries represented at the Islamic Center. And each one has a different cuisine, and they present them so beautifully. But yes, and baking, as I said,
it
right now I'm
together.
Baking for the YWCA
mm-hmm.
for their cake dinner.
That's right. So that brings people together. That's right.
Yes.
Sitting at the table. So what is your favorite, baking dish? How would you describe that?
Oh, that's not
fair. What's your specialty?
Well, I have to tell you, this is funny. My sister owned Maxine's Cafe and Bakery for 10 years. And she baked my wedding cake. It was the first one back in 1973. And she was known for that for a long time. But there's one cake, there's only one cake that I can make better than my sister.
Okay.
And that is, it's called Feather Layer Cake. And it is it was made by my mother's maternal grandmother, Mary Helen Gleichman Brandon. And it's really very simple. It's a yellow cake, and you make each layer into three or four layers, and there's custard in between. And it's just layered, and it sort of oozes out the side.
Can you use Swansdown flour for that?
Absolutely. None other, let me assure you.
That's the secret ingredient.
Yes, indeed. But it's... It's the one cake I can make better than my sister Lowry. And as a result, that's what I'm baking for the YWCA. And I have since the beginning, since they started doing this in 1985, I've been baking that one. Most of them are now done professionally
mm-hmm.
for that event.
Well, thanks for sharing the Iglehart family story with us. And now I'm hungry. I'm going to find some Swansdown cake flour and try my luck in the kitchen.
I'll send you a recipe. How's that?
Thank you so much for being my guest.
Glad to be here.
Thank you.
For recipes for the vintage white cake shown on the Swansdown box cover and other recipes for cookies, cupcakes, even banana bread, you can go online to swansdown.com or Reilly Products, R-E-I-L-Y. And here's a footnote about the Iglehart family history. During World War I, the United States shipped tons of flour to starving civilians in Belgium, which was then occupied by the German army. The flour was distributed by the Commission for Relief and was not considered contraband since it was supplied by the U.S., which was then a neutral power. Evansville-based Iglehart Brothers Milling was a major supplier in the relief effort. Future President Herbert Hoover headed the campaign, which shipped more than 700 million pounds of flour, along with sugar and grain, to more than 9 million starving civilians in both Belgium and northern France. The relief effort is still considered the largest humanitarian assistance campaign in world history. And there's an interesting story about those flour bags sent from Iglehart Brothers and other mills in the U.S. The Germans wanted the bags because the cotton could be used to manufacture ammunition. So the Belgians distributed the bags to schools, workrooms, convents, and artists. They would embroider over the mill logos to make clothing, pillows, bags, and what is now known as flour sack art. One sack from 1916 is embroidered in English, reading, "America's ships come over the sea. Ye Flemish bells ring out with glee." Thousands of embroidered former flour sacks made their way to organizations and were sold to raise money for food and to aid prisoners of war. And finally, this sweet twist to the cake flour relief story. Jingle Hagee Iglehart tells me a Belgian representative who accompanied her grandfather, Austin Iglehart, on trips to Europe married an Evansville woman, Mabel Lahr. I'm David James, and this is 2 Main Street.